You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
And we're rolling.
All right.
All right.
Hey. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Fat Gatsby's Triple Radio for, I guess, November. November.
I mean, you could save it until December or January.
We skipped September. Yeah, just put it in your back pocket. Listen to it later.
Yeah.
Some of the relevant points might be now irrelevant, but
it's true.
Hey, this is Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Hello.
I love the idea of keeping a podcast in your back pocket.
Honestly, I do sometimes. I'll be like, I don't want to listen to this right now.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, it's like it would be good for a big car ride coming up. You know?
Squirrel this away for a rainy day.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I guess a lot of game of the year podcasts I might kind of save for a big drive, even if I try to avoid big drives at this point. But, you know, it's like, okay, that's a thing. Usually those end up being hours long.
Yeah.
And,
well, any podcast that's over like 45 minutes, I'm going to pace out over a week or weeks.
Sometimes I try to save very funny podcasts for when I'm like have to go and interact with other people, because I feel like listening to funny people makes me a little quicker, a little snappier. And like it helps.
You need to warm up.
I need to warm up
with your friends.
with my parasocial relationship with podcasters.
So is that what you did this morning?
You can tell you can tell just how snappy I am.
I'm just trying to tell, are you juiced or not?
I am
on the podcast juice.
I'm as juiced as first thing in the morning caffeine, I guess.
Well, that sounds like high on life in a way.
There's been very little I'd say comedy so far this morning in this household before.
Wow.
Prior to your arrival.
All right. Yeah, we are recording in person, which is, I think the first time I've recorded an in-person podcast in like...
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
I'm going to say it's at least 5 or 6 years.
Well, because we didn't do it the last time I was up, and that was at least like a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
so.
That was in like, I remember Street Fighter VI was out, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where I tried it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, you were here. It was shortly after Street Fighter VI came out, so that was like a couple years ago even.
Yeah.
So a couple years before that,
I don't even know if we recorded the time before that.
I have photos of us sitting at my old dining room table.
I remember
George was here.
Okay. I just don't remember if that was the time. It probably was. I think you're correct. Audience,
but if George was here, we weren't trying that hard. I mean, like it was very
we
weren't trying.
We were just like putting him on and letting him just go. I'm sure.
Which is always magic. Always a recipe for pure delight.
But this is just a normal podcast. So it won't be special.
Nope.
Yes. And anyway. Just
expectations on the floor.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because Weiss is in Western New York.
Yeah. This was a...
Welcome home.
Thank you. Yeah, it was last minute notice. I know. Well, we got like a little like ka-choo on the plane coming down, and I was like, perfect. Yeah. That's all it needs
to
be.
That's how I know I'm home.
Yeah. And then it left. It left by the time I got in a car, so it was perfect.
Wow.
That's all I need.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, look at that. Oh. Yeah.
It exists. It's a real thing.
Did you experience any travel terribleness due to...
No, I mean, like, there was an insane... I took a red eye out because it was literally half the cost of any other, like, time.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was... Yeah, I was in the airport at like 3:30 a.m. and it was packed.
Oh, God.
On a Sunday morning, so that surprised me.
Ugh.
But aside from that, it was fine. Like, this is the first time I haven't had to take my shoes off, which I guess.
Huh.
Oh, wow.
Because that switched.
Ish. That can depend on your airport, I've discovered.
I know. Wow. And it can depend on the day sometimes too.
So I've known, in you know, last year I went down to DC twice within like 3-4 months of each other.
Oh yeah.
And it's like going out of Buffalo, they are way more relaxed. Thank you. Mm. Yeah, they don't care about your shoes as much. They don't care about like isolating your laptop electronic or whatever.
Wow.
But going through Washington, D.C., it's like everything. Shoes off. I got like 5 bins because I have a bunch of electronics on me.
That's my usual.
But however, traveling with a child is also different because they don't make you do as much shit. Because they're like, well, he's with a kid. He's not going to blow up the plane.
good to know.
Probably not. Like, well, literally, like, yeah, you can like skip some lines because they're just like, yeah, there's no way. That, okay, that's his child. Nothing bad is going on here. So, yeah, that's cool. But, yeah, definitely varies. Mm-hmm.
I'm in a couple of weeks. I'm flying out to Colorado.
Yeah, I saw that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Aaron's podcast like popular?
I mean, I think hopefully it has like a devoted fan, as devoted a regular fan base as ours. Does,
this is for a live podcast recording of Because Fuck You, That's Why.
Yeah.
Friend of
I was putting this together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have scheduled being in the. I'm also at the same time. I'm going to start directing the theater's holiday production, and so I've scheduled the rehearsals literally so tight that like I'm there, end rehearsal, drive to the airport just in time to get on the plane, get home. Half hour window to get to rehearsal on time, like
whirlwind trip.
Yeah. It's gonna be a real whirlwind trip, and just leaving from work, returning home, going straight to work.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that now that the shutdown's over, that travel is not gonna be. I'm not gonna have any terrible surprises. At least not out of the ordinary, because air travel still sucks, even at the best of times.
Well, it was assumptive. Perhaps I was putting it on, but I was like, everybody's happy. Oh, yeah, they're getting paid. Oh, yes. Okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, it's a feeling they haven't had in 40
years. Got that fat
days?
Furlough check.
Yes, hopefully.
Hit the bank.
Well, I didn't even follow if that happened, but yeah. But yeah.
Or maybe at least it's coming soon.
Yeah. What's what holiday production are you doing?
I'm directing How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Okay.
It is a an original, stage adaptation that I think first premiered in LA 15 years ago with John Larroquette, not as the Grinch, weirdly. It's framed that his dog is now old and he's relating the story of the Grinch.
Huh. Does he step off stage and go starts talking to the audience?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
this
no.
This direct to the audience, just
glass menagerie style. Yeah.
And it all,
it's a tale as old as time.
But it all rhymes. It's all in Seussian rhyme.
No, with a wink and a nudge, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, it's and a little bit of sort of like Ebenezer Scrooge interacting with the past. Like, oh, look at me. I was so young back then.
Ah, that's fun. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun and crazy busy. Mm-hmm. And while we're on the subject, can I just, because I mentioned to you guys that Paul Williams got the legendary songwriter and performer Paul Williams zoomed into our cast of Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Yeah.
And I said I was on the call. It's more accurate to say I was in the room while the call was happening. I didn't get to speak to Mr. Williams.
Okay.
But the whole cast got to introduce themselves and say, I played this character. The stage adaptation of Emmett Otter has new songs that he wrote.
Are there recordings of it already? Or
that's a good question. Ooh. I'm not
this
that's,
like
that's
new.
Possible. It's new. Yes, it's very newish.
Yeah,
like in the past few years, and he has been heavily involved in developing it.
Yeah.
There's a new. They've inserted the character of Emmett's late father, Pa Otter, as sort of a ghost.
Okay. Does he sit on the edge of the audience and start talking? There's me when I was younger.
And not a ghost.
And not a ghost.
No, it's one scene where he appears to his widow, Ma, to give her encouragement. But it is a recording of Paul's voice as Pa. So this is part of licensing the show, is that you get Paul Williams playing Pa Otter that the puppeteers puppet along to, basically. You don't have to use it. It's not required in the licensing agreement. So he asked on the Zoom, he said, are you using my voice as Pa Otter? And mm-hmm. we were like, yes, we love it. And he said, you know what? When I recorded that, it was just a demo and we decided it was good enough and I was just doing it as myself. I wish that I could re-record that and be a little more in character. And he started doing like the voice that he wished he could have done. And it was all I could do to be like, I will fly out.
I was like, why don't you just do it?
Like, literally.
What's stopping you?
A lo-fi shitty recording over Zoom of that.
it was incredible. Just to get to talk to him. He was so funny and so quick to, you know, joke around with all of us. And it was, and so many people are fans of the Muppets and Emmett Otter in particular in this cast. And so like, dreams came true for about half the people in that room.
That's cool.
It was really neat, and we're just so lucky to have the opportunity. And I guess what was funny of it is that I wasn't sure if he had specific like consultation notes that he wanted to give us. We didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. We just kind of let him lead it, and he totally did. He didn't really have any notes for it. He just kind of wanted to talk about like the development of the show and what it meant to him and what it meant to him to work with Jim Henson over the years and how it changed his life and how he said, he put it so poetically, is that everyone who gets to interact with a Muppet leaves the experience feeling a little more at home in their heart or something super poetic. Jesus. That Paul Williams would say.
Yeah. That's a very Paul Williams. Probably verbatim.
That was really cool.
No, that's
and that,
amazing.
That production opens next week.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to look up
even
what
if you get
said,
like a crap recording of that. Hopefully it makes it to Austin. I'm going to watch that too.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got one guy who's, he's performed it three times, so he's probably been involved in several iterations of it. He already knew Paul and sort of led the conversation, and he's acting as sort of our puppet master, so he knows all the Henson rules. Yeah. That's the thing. We're not allowed to take selfies with the puppets. Like, all Henson rules about puppets apply. Mm. Never, ever photograph a dead puppet.
Yes.
You know, when it's hanging up. All that stuff is very, very strict. I think everyone who's put on a Muppet ends up feeling more at home than when they started. That's what he said.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
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 No,
that was my afternoon yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, la-dee-da.
Yeah.
I want to hear that Nightmare Band. That's what I want to hear.
I still have not, I did hear one where I was in one rehearsal when they did it. Yeah, gotcha. They're doing great. Yeah. It's funny, you know, when you do this kind of thing, and part of the reason that I'm there, I'm the theater's dialect coach, but also like character voice consultant.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
And so often a lot of the actors have been asking me throughout this process, like, do I sound too much like the original special, or do I not sound different enough? Mm-hmm. And so, because you, in a way, you want to meet your audience's expectations, right? Because those voices are so ingrained in so many of their heads. And so sometimes it's about striking the right balance between being familiar, but not necessarily being a slave to the original voice. Like the guy that we've got playing Wendell, who blows into the jug, and who talks like this, Emmett, he's literally just doing that voice, but he does it perfectly.
Okay.
So like, I'm just like, yeah, you go ahead and do that, buddy. And our Ma Otter was on a Nickelodeon series in the early 2000s that involved puppets, something for very young audiences that would not have been on our radars at that age. Mm-hmm. But she's around our age.
Gotcha.
And she's got a beautiful singing voice. She's not trying. She came to me very concerned about, like, how am I doing in terms of, am I too far away from the special? Am I too close? And I, you know, was delighted to be able to tell her, like, whatever you're doing right now, you're riding that line perfectly.
Great.
Like, you don't sound exactly like her, but you sound enough. You're channeling whatever that is that audiences are going to be familiar, but no one's going to be put off by it. No one's going to be like, that's too different and I don't like it. You know, riding that line just so.
Like a lot of the, from my point of view, is just like whatever stops people from like getting in their heads thinking about it in the moment. Is that something like you have to deal with, where I'm just sort of like, if you're thinking about it when you're doing the voice, now it's a bad voice versus the actual sound of it.
Well, that's why I get there really early. That's why I, when I do this kind of thing, I'm at the, I'm not at rehearsal every single day, but I'm there like the very first couple of days so that they make those adjustments early on, lock it in, make it a part of their process so that they don't have to think about it in the moment when they get on stage. So yeah, hopefully they're folding that in as early as possible while many of them are learning how to puppeteer too.
Okay. Like, I was wondering if these were like experienced puppeteers or not.
No, it's all just a musical theater performers. Half the cast is local and half the cast was cast from a casting agency we use in New York. And so like, you know, our puppet master, who's playing Doc Bullfrog and a couple other characters, you know, he's done the show three times. Yeah, he's very experienced. And our Ma Otter, who did, she did this Nickelodeon show, which was heavily involved with puppets. So presumably she's got some experience too, although she's not actually doing any puppeteering in this show. That's the thing. It's kind of half a human cast and half puppets. So sometimes people are interacting with puppets. Sometimes they are literally, the person is playing a role and, Chuck, the lead singer of the Nightmare Band, is also like the snake. So he's got the snake on his arm talking to the snake as Chuck. He'll be costumed as Chuck. It's a lot.
It's a fun challenge.
It's a real fun. I mean, obviously they're all loving learning how to do this like dream come true for so many of them to get to have an experience like this. And some of them have done like Avenue Q before because they're musical theater. So they're not fully inexperienced with puppets, but Henson puppets are, they're huge. Like Doc Bullfrog is the size of a small child.
Easily.
Like some of them are, I was taken aback at how big they are. And of course they have to be. And especially the puppets that are, that have hands, that have functional hands. We've got one guy who's he's a musician, he's a guitarist. He's got to play, he's the other guy who does barbecue before the band and makes them have to switch. And he's literally got to play that in real time through the puppet hands. And he's like, this is fucking hard. The fur on the puppet hands is muting all the other strings. I don't know if I can do this. So, you know, we're working through logistical stuff like that as we go and figuring it out.
There was a Dark Crystal anniversary this, I forget the number, and Shout Factory put...
Probably 40, right?
Yeah, because it was 82, so probably 45. Yeah, I know.
That sucks.
That sucks.
But there was a documentary made in 83 on Dark Crystal that wasn't widely available. It's on YouTube right now.
Great.
It's pretty amazing. And the one thing that really stuck with me is like when Frank Oz is doing some of, I forget one of which creature he was doing, but you know, it's before they put the voices in. So he's just doing Miss Piggy. With like, just Skeksis walking around or whatever. It's great.
The doc was made in 83?
Yeah. So I
would hope it would be a little less tightly controlled than a modern doc would be then.
Yeah, it's pretty fly on the wall. It's good. Hour long. It's remastered enough that it's really pretty to just see like the puppets up close like that. And just figuring some of the stuff out. Like Frank Oz is having people walk a few times just to see. Like he's got Chamberlain like kind of walking towards him. He's like, try it running. Just like run full force at me, which is what they use.
Wow.
Because like the motion is so weird when he does it. And I'm also like, I would be scared shit. Yeah, very cool.
That's very cool. All right, I'm done. Thank you for indulging.
That was half a transition.
It was. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I started watching because the Double Fine just put up their doc on The Keeper.
Yeah, I want to play it first. But...
Which I played The Keeper.
Man, that game looks great.
It was really cool. I really liked it. It's, you know, kind of the, it was the perfect chaser after spending a lot of time with Silksong.
I don't know anything about it. I saw you post about it, but I have not followed this game at all. Can you nutshell it for me?
Yeah, so it's, they only announced it in like June. this was the team that worked on Rad, yeah, which I didn't like, and Headlander, which I did like.
As well as stacking.
And going back to stacking.
It's Lee Petty.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And there's some other. I think, game that they worked on in between there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there was.
That I'm forgetting right now.
Right.
But yeah, so no, in Keeper, you are a... you play as a lighthouse.
Yep.
A sentient lighthouse.
It's this game.
Yep. Yes, it's this game.
Yep.
And it's this... It's only like 4 or 5 hours long. It's this really surreal thing that could only... And their whole concept behind it is just like, you know, they had Rad, which was very deep, like systems heavy. This is video gamey. It is, you know, it had to be pitched as like, you know, this is a roguelike that fits into an existing genre. And they
I didn't
just
know
wanted
it was a roguelike.
Yeah.
I always wanted to play Rad, but yeah.
I reviewed it and I didn't like it, but then it got patched. So maybe it got better, but I never circled back to it. But they just wanted to move very far away from like anything that was like recognizable as something you would do in a video game. And then they got moved over to Psychonauts 2, and then they came back to this. And then like at some point, you know, the idea was rolling around in his head of just like, what if you were just the lighthouse? What if you were just the lighthouse? What if you were just a freaking lighthouse?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where they went. So it's like, yeah, you play as you're controlling a lighthouse. throughout this game, and you're kind of navigating this island. And it's this kind of crazy thing that could only exist as a video game because there's no dialogue in the game, but there's tons of like world and storytelling. Like you are walking through this island trying to, I guess there's like a corruption that has overtaken it. So you're seeing like the remnants of the civilization and civilizations that are still there.
Okay.
And healing and trying to help them out.
I got the feeling because I didn't want to watch too much that it was just like, yeah, restoration,
yeah.
Walk around, help things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little bit of Okami-ish, yeah. I guess, in that sense. Thematically. But yeah. And you have like a little bird dog friend, you know, follows you around and you kind of, the game takes place over like a series over time. Cause like years passed, seasons passed. And you keep like getting separated and like reconnecting. But it's just like a really cool friggin' video game. Like it's just so good.
Put it on the box.
It's so pleasant to play. And like the world is so cool to look at.
Yeah.
It's just interesting and it doesn't overstay its welcome, and there's not any parts that are like, oh, this is a frustrating puzzle to have to navigate or figure it out.
Great. Perfect for me.
Yeah, it's
gotta put this on my wish list.
Yeah
it is really
unfortunately cool not on play. Something I can play yet.
No it was on, you know, Game Pass for me, so
yeah,
I just blew through it.
Oh yeah, well, Lee Petty gets like top billing here, the top of the description from Lee Petty and Double Fine Productions.
Yeah.
Oh, above Double Fine. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. He's been there so long.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was like, hey, like we're owned by Microsoft now, so we don't have to pitch a video game that people would be interested in. So let's just see what we can do here. And Microsoft was in it.
Do Microsoft games make it to PlayStation at all? Or is that
okay. Quite frequently.
I assumed. Give it 6 months to a year.
Well, I mean, like, but Halo is coming out on PlayStation next year.
I almost did an actual spit. I'm like, it would have been fun.
Yeah, well, it's like Indiana Jones is on there. Like, all the, I mean, they own Call of Duty. They had to, you know, pinky promise the UK government that they'd keep putting Call of Duty out there to get their merger approved with Activision.
Oh.
But yeah, I think Keeper will end up coming out on PlayStation and other things at some point.
Yeah.
After they...
That was my hope.
Thing. I cannot imagine that it wouldn't, because it seems questionable how much money things make by being on Game Pass.
Yeah. Yep.
But then I kept playing games on Game Pass for a little bit because Ninja Gaiden 4 came out, so I tried that out for a bit.
I feel like I'm the only one of us that liked like the early of the Xbox Ninja Gaidens. I don't even know how to classify them at this point as a series.
Well, it's like Ninja Gaiden Black, you know.
Yeah,
The Black series is what came from that, like the 3D.
It's just funny because that was like the second or third iteration of that series, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Namesake, but yeah.
Yeah, it was. It's weird that like there was two Ninja Gaiden games that came out this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In both genres. And one I finished and this one I'm not going to.
No, I didn't think you would.
Dude. No, it's like, yeah, I didn't like Ninja Gaiden Black as much as most, I don't know, a lot of people did. That's like a classic. Yeah. Really,
it was a love hate because it's really hard. I really gelled with it. It was really hard and like in ways that are annoying, like it in ways that are kind of artificially hard. So I wasn't sure if that carried over.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this was developed by Platinum, and I also played Ninja Gaiden 2, the second one, at some point, which I only really remember because like I had a snow day from work. Back at the time, and I spent all day playing the game while on voice chat with Darren while he was playing like BioShock or something. So we were just like, it's just a good memory of just like hanging out playing video games.
I mean, that Ninja Gaiden is where that, you know, woman full of scorpions came from. That was literally that.
Yeah, but I remember just not loving too that much. It just felt like very boilerplate kind of character action-y thing.
Yeah.
And then I didn't touch 3. And then this, like, I was, like, actually feeling pretty good about, like, for the first few levels. And then, like, I got into the kind of second set. Like, the first set of levels, you're, like, you're in, like, this city. And, you know, you're doing, like, the flying swallow and giant spinning pile driver drop and things are feeling
very satisfying.
Yeah, very satisfying. And then I'm like, the next set of levels take place in this like windy valley, and like by the third level set in there, I'm like, oh, I kind of am ready for a change of scenery and a change of enemies. And like, you're just, how many more encounters do we need, and how many more enemies do we need to put in these encounters? And this just seems like a lot, guys. Thinking about it, it's one of the things it helps me really attach to Devil May Cry and like Bayonetta, and that like all the encounters are very distinct in those games. Like you finish them and you get a grade on them.
Yeah.
Like each level only has so many set and they are set encounters. Like you're in them, this many enemies attack you, you clear it, you get a grade on it, you move on, you're exploring. This is just like, there's constantly like motherfuckers like jumping up and on me and just like, okay, here's another wave of these guys. And I'm just like, I can't, this is not for me, man. Yeah. It's just like exhausting at a certain point. I'm not getting the satisfaction out of it. Even though I think like, you know, their combat systems are good.
That's the thing.
The stuff like, they put in there.
It is very satisfying to like try. It's just like the situations they put you in.
Yeah, it's just like a lot. It's so fun because like sometimes it's like I'll just rip through them and just like, man, I fucked up everything here really easily. And then sometimes I'm like, God damn, this guy is just taking so many hits and I can't hack a limb off or something. Mm-hmm. I guess I could just knock down the difficulty, but then I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I should have done that and just seen how it felt.
Yeah.
But
I'm not well versed enough in the subtleties of the that era of character action games, but it does feel like, I don't know, an interesting corporate turn of events that, because I do feel at the time that like there was a friendly rivalry and a challenge to outdo each other between Devil May Cry and Ninja Gaiden at the time that those series were new.
Yeah,
and so it's,
I suppose to a degree, I mean, they both kind of like fed on each other's success too.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, Team Ninja and
well, there was like 3 Devil May Cry games on PS2.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't another Ninja Gaiden until
for
like
so
well
long
into the 360 era. Yeah, so it's they weren't like going back and forth.
No, no. I guess it just felt like because those were PS2 exclusives, the Devil May Cry games, almost felt like this was what, you know,
this was Xbox
had.
Version.
This was Xbox's version of, and but because I don't know enough of the subtleties, is there anything that you can sort of pick out as like, oh, this is classic Platinum versus this is something that they are trying to make sure that they're honoring the Ninja Gaiden series?
I guess that's a good What would change this from Platinum to Team Ninja?
Right,
versus? It feels. This feels like a Platinum game where they tried more, I guess. It's like you compare it to like their budget stuff, like Korra and Transformers Devastation, which still ruled.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, there's a amount of like care and thought. and them trying
feel
to
like a reskin. Like,
no,
I forgot it definitely they feels did that like horror game.
It definitely feels
and the
like
Ninja Turtles game that got delisted.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It got delisted. Yep, huh? Yeah. I never touched that one.
Yeah, because it got delisted.
Yeah. Well, I heard it wasn't great too.
Right. But, yeah.
Yep. That's so, part of it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they're hitting the legacy of those games in a way that I think, you know, probably if mm-hmm. you like those Ninja Gaiden games, you'll really like this one.
Yeah.
But I didn't love those Ninja Gaiden games, so I'm kind of like, okay, you know, this is fine.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's Game Pass, so whatever. I'll play 5 hours of it and walk away.
Yeah.
Hands clean.
Honestly, I'd do the same. Like, I wouldn't have bought it, like, full price, or I'm not, obviously.
Yes.
But unless somebody is like, no, this one turned out really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be frustrated. You will finish it.
Is there... This is, I forget if I shift gears a little bit too soon, but
nah.
Is when does your Game Pass subscription run out? And is there, are you considering
never.
Letting it never really like,
well,
are you
so,
topped off for a long time?
So here's my deal with Game Pass. Cause obviously, there's reasons why one might not want to support Microsoft as a company. But so they changed their Game
That's
Pass.
That's not why I ask, but it is yeah. kind of why I ask.
Yeah. No. But this is why, because it's like, yeah, under maybe like different circumstances. I mean, it's really kind of the only reason to have an Xbox at this point. And mm-hmm. so here's the thing. So they changed like their subscription tiers last year.
Yeah.
To like, there's like a core one or something. Yeah, there's core. And then like, I don't know, ultimate, like the price just went up more. Recently, and you know, with Ultimate, like I think you can also PC is also a separate thing. This is confusing, but with Ultimate, like you get everything, and you get like the EA games, and now I think Ultimate is what you have to get the day one releases. So what I have is the depreciated Game Pass for consoles, which is still only $10.99 a month, and I get all the day one releases still.
But you can only play them on your Xbox, as
but I
to...
yeah, I can only play them on my Xbox, not on the PC.
Right,
sure.
But it is.
I mean, yeah, that's great though.
Yeah. So as long as I am subscribed to it, I mean, maybe at some point they're gonna cut. I imagine at some point they're gonna have to cut off that level. They're just kind of hoping, like over the course of years, those people will drop off like me, and they'll only be pissing off like a few, I don't know, thousand people at that point. But yeah, so like, so long as I keep paying for it, and I have the auto pay set up, like so long as I keep paying for it, I get Game Pass and I get kind of all most of the fixins. Mm-hmm. The day one releases, that's really the important part.
For
the low price of $10.99 a month.
I was going to say, I'm new to doing the PlayStation Plus. I'm doing like, I'm doing the middle tier at like 18, 19 a month, at least for now until I'm going to see if there's anything. If there's any Black Friday deals, if not, like, you know, the second I like buy Expedition 33 on a Black Friday deal, like, I will probably pause that until I'm done with that or whatever.
Well, I just got an email, I think yesterday, from Sony telling me that my PlayStation Plus subscription was going to lapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this is the I have had PlayStation Plus continuously since. I want to say like 2009 at least, like definitely ever since they had that big like privacy data hack on PS3 and they rewarded subscribers with like
a
14 free games. So it's been at least 16 years continuously. And so I've accumulated this massive digital library, even PSP games that were PlayStation Plus free.
I still have some of those.
I have.
Yep.
And this will be the first time that I'm going to let it lapse because until now I had stacked subscriptions from back when you could reliably get it for $40 a year. And now it's at least
so
$80 at the very lowest tier a year. And like, I don't really play my PlayStation anymore. And there's a big part of me that's like, but my library.
Yeah.
You know, I've depended on those games being there for 16 years and now they just won't be.
Here's the thing though. It's like, if you want it, like you can just resubscribe and they'll all be there.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah,
they don't really, because I let mine lapse a couple years ago. I was just like, I'm not playing these. Well, it's this whole thing where it's like, okay, if it's free on PlayStation Plus, then like chances are it's in a Humble Bundle somewhere within that vicinity.
Yeah, I have a lot
it's
of
on
overlap.
Game Pass.
Yeah.
It was free on Epic Game Store.
Yeah.
Like there was
you've
some
got
other
a lot
place.
Of options.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Where it yeah. showed up. Or I could play one of those free games that are sitting in my library not getting touched.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
but
it's
like
it's the curse yeah. of the backlog, partly. Yeah, yeah. You know? But there are a couple yeah. of exclusives in there that I was like, you know, hey man, maybe this will be the time mm-hmm. I finally start playing the Yakuza series. Oh, it's sitting in my mm-hmm. PlayStation Plus
See,
library.
Yeah, that's one I'm still waiting for as well. Well, I mean the first what the fuck are on there? Yeah, it's like a dragon.
Like a dragon, yeah,
this
yeah.
month
mm.
is probably the one that I would dive into, but I'm waiting for like the collection. Because I've played the annoying thing. I know you can leap in anywhere and it's a large series, but I played the first one. Mm-hmm. So I want to play the second one. Yeah. So I want to play them in order.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
They're the sequels to Shenmue. Yeah. Really.
And of course, you know, series like that are now more widely available than mm-hmm. ever
yeah.
before. And now that I have a Steam device that
yeah.
can capably play. Ooh, yesterday I'm excited to do this. Yesterday I just bought this this frame generation tool that I've seen some YouTubers talk about. It's meant for low end PCs,
okay.
and it's this lossless tool that is just sort of it's artificial frame generation, so it kind of doubles your frame rate.
Yeah,
in a way,
okay.
depending on and you know. You mentioned Clair Obscur.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I got that running on my Steam Deck, but barely.
Oh, okay.
And I really could have used a tool like this.
Yeah.
It requires installing Deki, which is the third-party thing that allows you to install, like, plugins. But apparently, you know, like, it works great. It's a great tool. It's not expensive in terms of processing overhead, so... if anything, it saves you battery life because you can lower a game's settings... Mm-hmm. And then turn on this frame generation tool and get a smoother frame rate with using less processing power. Mm. So I'm excited to install that and see mm-hmm. if that upgrades my AAA game experience on this and tide me over. Feel like I don't need to purchase a Steam machine.
There's
Is
a
that
transition.
A pivot? Is that a transition?
Could be. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah,
Let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah. We talk news sometimes.
Yeah, new hardware. Man, a trio of new hardware from Valve.
I know. As a, you know, like that was one of the things that, like aside from money, from buying like a Steam Deck where like it would output like a Switch, you know, like mm-hmm. a 720p. Like this seems like a nice self-contained system. We don't know price. You've looked into it more than I have on that end. But it is kind of what I would have been looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Especially like, I mean, most of the time I use my Steam Deck as a console.
Yeah.
It I love that I can treat it like a Switch and use it handheld when I want to, but like the Switch, I mean, I mostly played the Switch docked as well. So, you know, I wanted it as a console, as a games machine, and it fulfills that role really, really well. And so the idea of just a dedicated Steam machine that has the level of thought put into it that the Steam Deck had, because it's a wonderful piece of hardware. You know, a far cry from back when they were letting Alienware just sort of license the brand and design the previous generation of Steam machine. How long ago was that? Was that like 10 years
that
ago?
That was forever ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they
yeah.
did like the Steam, what is that little doodad, the Steam AirPlay thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Steam Link,
that thing,
yeah.
And they had the first Steam controller that was a
I was
hot
gonna
trash
say, that looked like
I
the,
thought you liked it
the controller,
yeah.
No, it's okay.
Okay, it reminded me a lot of what was the NES controller with the touch
the Max
pad.
the Max,
yeah. I was just like weird choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this is very exciting. Tim, I don't know if you've looked much into analysis of pricing and stuff. I feel like I've seen the number $800 come up just in terms of like breakdown, like this is what the parts would cost.
Yeah.
And this seems to be the most reasonable price, which, you know, is not what I would hope for necessarily. But I mean, for an entry level gaming PC that gets you the Steam OS experience without any effort, does that seem like a fair price to you?
Yeah. Well, if it's going to be powerful, which is, it sounds like it's not, because, you know, the Steam Deck is a little underpowered to be a portable, And, you know, I was kind of thinking like, oh, if they have like Steam Deck level power in a box, like that thing will be cheap.
Well, yeah.
And not bad, yeah, really, for everything the Steam Deck can do and play. Yeah. But I suppose it's like, okay, if you're putting games on your TV, you want them to look nice.
Sure. Yeah,
so you got to put that power behind it. But when it's like, you know, the attraction of buying a console day one has become like, this is probably the cheapest it will ever be.
I know.
You know, when the premium Xbox and PlayStation SKUs are getting up to like $700 or $800, yeah, it's like, yeah, sure, a PC,
right,
that could be $800. Why not? It's tough to see myself ever buying another Xbox at this point, just because like they're putting everything out on other consoles,
yeah,
because
yeah,
they're not making, they're trying to make Xbox their brand that you can play anywhere and blah 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 blah. You don't need a dedicated Xbox console for it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that'll be the point where I get rid of my Game Pass subscription. We'll see.
Yeah.
And Microsoft sucks.
Yeah, and Microsoft sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, it's hard for me to also see myself getting a, like, it's so weird to talk about new game consoles, like a PlayStation 6 or whatever's coming out. Because, like, I don't know, it yeah, seems like there's still a lot of potential in the PlayStation yeah, 5 to be even thinking about a PlayStation 6. But even that, it's like, yeah, you know, a lot of games still come out on PlayStation 4 even now. There's only so many games that are actually
yeah,
legitimately PlayStation 5 exclusive.
It has been weird going through like PlayStation Plus being like, oh, that was a PS4 game. That mm-hmm, was, I see. And like the difference, I could see the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know, is pretty yeah, accurate. Like the PS5 is really powerful. Like I'm sure that yeah, thing will be relevant well past 2030. So
I think the sad thing is like, you know, how many of our favorite games are end of console cycle games?
Mm-hmm.
That is just like, ah, we figured it out. Like, are we going to get that again?
Yeah.
Or are they just going to make a new system early enough now? Because that's cheaper.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Tears of the Kingdom was an end of console.
Yes.
Game. Like that to me, I think that might be the only... That's mm-hmm, the only one that I can think of, though. That's a prime
recently,
example of that. Yeah. Like they, you know, took everything that they learned and crammed it in there.
Yeah,
because the life cycles of PlayStation, especially PlayStation, they've just coexisted and overlapped for so long,
yeah,
and so many developers had to target PS4 level spec
mm-hmm,
because that was the install base.
And backwards compatibility is
you
know, not mm-hmm, really a question anymore. It's like, yeah, whatever PlayStation 6 is, we'll probably still play those PlayStation 4 games
yeah,
in some capacity. I don't know if you'll be able to stick a disc in, but
right,
will it have a disc drive? Oh,
yeah, but, I know.
So, yeah, I just feel like I'm not going to be under threat of not being able to play something for not getting a PS6 or whatever. Maybe
yeah,
they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, Final mm-hmm, Fantasy 17, that'll be exclusive, but that's not going to come out for years and years. But
no,
yeah, but then it's like, oh, if the alternative is, ooh, Steam Box.
Right.
And like, you know, so many things will just filter to PC. It's like, well, yeah.
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 That's going to be ultimately cheaper in a lot of those. Yeah. No, I was surprised with PlayStation Plus and like my PSP games showed up and the, you know, mm-hmm, the stuff that I bought on PS3 was all there. And I'm just
yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh, how about that? Wild Arms that I bought on sale right at the end, etc. Yeah, I guess I can transition to the one game I've been playing, which is mm-hmm, a lot of Alan Wake 2.
Oh, so that game work out for you then?
Yeah, well, yes, I mean, there are still things that drive me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think Remedy is not good at cartography. just like making a map.
Yeah, that's fair.
That game's... Like, I liked Control, but I really like Alan Wake 2. Like,
mm-hmm,
that game, yeah, this... really good. Like I, you know, like I could find, and also like I try tend not to listen to soundtracks and scores until I have like context, so like, you know, now I can listen to all those old Gods of Asgard songs
mm-hmm,
like literally on the drive here.
Yeah.
I bumped down the difficulty only once. It's kind of the same thing where it's like I was like, okay, I can go back and forth. And then I was like, well, I've played most of this game normal. Okay, I'm just going to push myself
okay,
through. But it's just, yeah, because it's...
Was that towards the very end?
No, it was towards the beginning, because it's...
Oh.
The problem is the things that are fast and you don't know where they're going. Mm. So it's the wolves, the taken wolves, as well as the throwers.
Yeah.
The takens that throw shit at you and then run around you, and you're like, where the fuck did you go?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I feel like the game is tougher early on because you don't really have
right
means of dealing with things yet.
Yeah, it's... Well, and the dodge is...
I also missed the first opportunity you could get a shotgun, so there's that, too.
Well, and I did that almost every, like, upgrade where it was just sort of like, oh, the level's over. Okay, now I'm going to go back and get the rifle, the shotgun. like, in both of those.
I was so mad when I figured that out.
Well, that's... And that's the thing. It's like, there's enough, like, frustrating that, like, I don't love, like, the similar to Control, like, the pace of the upgrades, like, is kind of tricky. Finding the words of power is kind of tricky, but satisfying. I like how they did that. Like, Alan Wake is underpowered compared to Saga, but New Game Plus, Alan Wake feels way overpowered because I have, like, the weapons from the first run through.
Yeah, yeah.
As well as the upgrades, which is nice. But yeah, like, everything is so smooth. Like, as a narrative game, this feels like the first, like, modern console game, like, that I've played. I mean, like, you know, it's this and Astrobot at this point, but, you know, transitions are like nothing at this point. Like, I didn't run into any glitches. It looks very nice, and, like, the performances are great. Like, honestly, Alan Wake 2 did what, because I was so in the dark for both that and Control, the mixed media that Alan Wake 2 does is kind of what I expected out of Control. When Control is being, like, sold, I was just sort of like, oh, they're going to do some weird shit.
It was only a little bit in Control,
A little bit, yeah. Like, it's cool, but Alan Wake 2 is like, okay, that's what I thought we were, very satisfying, just the way it ties into things. Yeah, combat's great. Like, I want to go back to the original. Like, I haven't played like the regular outside of the barbecue DLC, because I was playing that for a while, like every other summer, just throw that on because it's a great summer game. But it's basically the Resident Evil 4 mercenary mode kind of thing. It's just wave after wave with a silly setting. But I haven't played the combat since playing 2 at this point. I could definitely see why that was up for Game of the Year awards. I guess I haven't looked into, but it makes sense that Lance Reddick was, like, thanked in the ending. He's not playing Mr. Door, but I'm like, oh, that was clearly meant for. Like, that actor is, like, yeah, I could see that casting very much.
Just think back of Alan Wake 1. Feels, I mean, you know, I haven't touched that since it came out. I did grab the remaster when it was cheap at some point, which was good because it got more expensive somehow. Just one of those things. But just, like, there's so much variety and, like, like, they were always out to do something with every chapter in Alan Wake, like the hotel, in the streets, and and just, like, the different parts of the forest. Like, okay, yeah, the rundown, like, deer land, is that the little amusement park?
Oh, the Coffee World, or
Coffee World, that's what it's called. Not deer land. Coffee
well
World.
It's the Deer Fest is happening in
Deer
the
Fest
town.
Is happening, and then Coffee World is, like, this little, you know, off the road, like, freaking Beaver Island amusement park style
so funny
thing that's just an absolute nightmare.
Actual scares, like, as you know, like, I've said, you know, like, I like action horror games. I don't like survival horror games. I don't like survival tactics in games in general, usually, but they did the jump scares are good, genuinely get you. It sounds like I have so many negative things, but they just, like, fly by because I'm enjoying it so much. Like, weirdly, one of my only negative, I'm still wrestling with, like, the way that it, like, Control contextualizes it, because I think, like, I still prefer it being supernatural to it be like I got midichlorianed a little bit from explanation.
Right.
I'm just sort of like,
there was too much science behind why this happens, even if they don't understand it.
Well, supernatural versus like sci-fi horror, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you're just sort of like, oh, you're explaining things. Like it's cool. It's definitely cool that it ties in. But I also like the mystery of just sort of like, this is weird. This weird thing is happening.
Why is this happening? Oh, this is just a thing that happens, apparently, and it's measurable.
Exactly. Yeah, it's measurable. Yeah, that sort of thing. But, I mean, it does such a good job. It rules.
Again. Yeah, I remember the... because, you know, they have the FBC, like, dotted around. Like, they have their listening posts and such like that. And, and, like, all the little experiments they did with, like... You have to find the wooden figures and then place them, and then like something will attack. It makes something appear in the woods, which is kind of creepy.
No, I liked I liked that. I think like that all worked. Like even the FBC like kind of running those scenarios and stuff like that. Just in the back of my head, it was just sort of like, oh, Alan Wake is one of many of these things that I just played in Control versus like. The world, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I just think the centerpiece like musical stage is incredible, just ridiculous.
Yeah,
completely insane.
Kind of over. Like I loved both. Well, there's kind of two, I guess. Yeah, but that center one kind of just definitely stole. And I guess. Yeah, I was gonna say they kind of mesh because there's two or three, but the one that you get the flare gun, which I think is the one we're talking about, because like it's that sequence. They give you the flare gun for the first time, which is my favorite gun in the game, anyways, because it's basically a fucking grenade launcher in your hand. So it's like you're like, oh, here, have this great music. Now enemies are popping like balloons.
Yeah, and it all looks great.
Yeah, and it looks so good.
Kind of the way I always appreciate a good, like an actual good video game forest. That was just like something that stuck in my craw back in like the Fable days, where it's like, okay, you're gonna go in the woods, but it's a path. The trees are too close on the side, and you can't go through those. And just it's like, oh well, it's like you'd start out like at the parking lot, and you could still see the sun setting, but like like in real life, once you get in the woods, it's dark.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, like, it was hard for me orientation-wise, but, like, in a way that wasn't frustrating unless, again, the throwers showed up, and I'm just like, oh, God damn it. I mean, like, puzzles I looked up, I don't feel bad for the chests the first time through. Like, I'm not even doing that this time. But, no, I looked up all the... lunch boxes just to, because they're power-ups, so I was going to.
Yeah, at a certain point, I was just like, I can't go dragging back through all these areas trying to find some random one thing that I missed.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And I just had maps
in front of me. And the nursery rhymes sometimes were just, like, worded so stupidly that I was just like, okay.
Yeah, it didn't quite make sense. I'm just kind of like, okay, well, I got all these pieces.
Yep. But...
Dave got so bored of the Alan Wake conversation, went to set up his tripod with his camera.
Jan asked for a selfie.
That's okay. This is not that then. It's on a tripod.
A tremendous amount of work for that.
Yeah,
it was awesome. I hope it.
Makes
money. Still, it's like 2 years later. I don't know. I still haven't played the DLC for that.
I was just gonna ask because I'm. I don't know if I want to pick it up or if I want to wait and just buy it as like. Altogether, since I don't technically own the game.
Yeah, it seems like you'd probably want to wait for a sale on the whole thing at like some point.
I would like to have a physical one on that. That'd be neat.
Yeah,
actually use that disc drive that I got with it.
Yeah.
I mean, back to prices. That was the only reason that I bought that was like, which what?
Dave's
what,
like, what? Be candid.
Oh yeah.
He's like, we're taking pictures now,
boys. Taking pictures. This can be promotional.
Act normal.
This can be.
Yeah, I don't see. I don't know what. He's got a little remote in his pocket, snapping some snaps.
He's taking a picture of us. Yeah,
right. Now I'm posing. But yeah, now it's back to pricing. Yeah, I bought that PS5 for $340 as a 1 terabyte pro with a disk drive because I'm like, literally, it will never be this cheap again.
Yeah. Actually, okay, so that reminds me. So I was trying to think what I've played on PlayStation at all recently, which is not a whole hell of a lot. But I keep forgetting. I haven't talked about Split Fiction at all, have I?
Well, I saw it on the Game Awards nominees.
Yeah. Well, but it's like, you know, it's a game you have to play co-op. It's one of those.
Right. That's why I ignored it.
Yeah, it's a Haze Light. But it's like, you know, I was like, oh, this might be, I got it for Father's Day. Because, of course, it's like, oh, this is something I can play with my child.
Yeah, yeah.
Though I don't, you know, we don't always.
Though I don't.
It doesn't always line up for us to, you know, be in the mood to play it. But, like, you know, it's a pretty. It's just simple, like, action platformer stuff going on. But there's cool situations that they put you in, you know, a bit of a roller coaster ride. But, you know, and I don't take it that serious because it's not very punishing. It's like, it checkpoints very frequently. Like, if one person dies and the other person's alive, it just brings the other person back. But Richard gets so stressed out about it, about, like, the platforming and any kind of, like, more intensive action that just, like, sometimes we can only play it in, like, 30-minute chunks. And we still have, like, so much of the game to play through. Because he'll just be like, oh, I can't, you know, it's just too much, like, jumping. Or, no, get away from me, cat. You know, jumping or the combat or, like, the puzzle solving or, like, the timing of having to do this. And, like, he just gets in his own head about it. I'm like, dude, it's fine. Like, I'm having an okay time. Like, I'm not worried about it. Like, I want to spend time with you, buddy. But he'll just kind of. So, I don't know. At some point, we'll get through that whole game, I'm sure. Will it be before the end of the year? I don't know. A lot of people were talking about it kind of big as a potential game of the year contender, but I feel like that's been drowned out with so many of the other. It was not nominated for game of the year at the Game Awards. But yeah, I just feel like it's been overwhelmed by all the other incredible stuff that's come out this year.
There's big stuff.
But who among those nominees does not deserve to be there? Let's talk about that. Which one of those six games sucks?
Well, I haven't played Kingdom Come Deliverance 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I put it on like my wish list because I'm like, people keep talking about it and that game doesn't go away. So I feel like I need to check it out. It
doesn't go away.
Well, no, because people keep, it's not, well, Split Fiction was something that like people talked about and then it kind of went away. But Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, I didn't play 1, and it sounds like I don't have to. And it does sound like something I'd probably be interested in. It just wasn't on my radar, so, you know, maybe at some point I'll check it out. But what else? It's Hades 2, Silk Song, Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2, which I also haven't played, but is definitely, like, that's kind of my number one looking for a decent Black Friday deal game.
Yeah, that was where I saw the nominees, was just from Hideo's Instagram.
And what's the other one?
Did you say Silk Song?
I said Silk Song, Hades 2, Death Stranding 2. Split Fiction wasn't nominated for.
Oh, he had it on there for something.
This list is suddenly the hardest thing in the world.
It's in there. It's that one's under, like, best multiplayer games.
Okay. Oh, Bonanza.
Yeah, Bonanza. There we go. Bonanza's in there.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, what the fuck's Bonanza? Yeah. DK, Donkey Kong.
I mean,
DK, Donkey
Kong. Of the games I play, well, no. Well, next month we'll be doing Blank of the Year, so I don't want to spoil my rankings. But, yeah, I feel like, wow, Expedition 33 got nominated for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
By virtue of the fact that I guess it qualifies as an indie game, which is, I mean,
I saw people fighting that. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's technically true. I mean, like,
but that's
Jeff was trying to push the narrative that, like, oh, it was made by like a small team of 26 people. And they're like, that is not true.
Yeah. And also, that's just harsh on the other developers. Yeah, like, I mean, sorry, every indie team.
Yeah. It just like looking at the indie nominees and it's like, oh, it's Expedition 33, Silk Song, and Hades 2. Like, what a bummer that, like, you're just completely overshadowed this year.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's not fair to say, like, because you're nominated for Game of the Year, maybe you shouldn't be nominated for Indie Game of the Year. But also, like, when half of them are Game of the Year nominees, maybe, you know, it's like that's where Blueprints got a little bit of shine. I think that's where maybe Ball Pit, which I've also played,
got mentioned,
but it was just kind of like,
I don't know. I mean, like, these things are kind of arbitrary, but like, use it to at least spotlight things that people might not have heard of.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving some marketing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything that's been particularly undersung that you think
for Game of the Year?
I mean, Blueprints is the one that I've heard is the one that should have gotten a shot, but
it's hard to, I mean, like, having not played Death Stranding 2 or Kingdom Come
Deliverance,
it's kind of hard to argue. I mean, maybe it's hard to argue with anything that's up there. I've heard Death Stranding two is very, very good. Yeah. So now that I finished Death Stranding 1, I do want to check that out.
I know. I have to look at lists and be like, what was this year? What was last year in general? Because I'm like, UFO 50. Nope, not so much. All right. But, yeah, Dave, did you play anything?
Only a couple of things that I guess I would mention. Yeah. Where's my list?
Well, while you're doing, yeah, that
yeah
games so, that I did not play. Like, I was like, I tried Cocoon and I went, well, you know, very well made game. That's just way too much for me.
All right.
Yeah. Incredibly well made game. I'm just could not, like, by like the second or third puzzle, I'm just like laughing at it. No, just like, nope.
Couldn't wrap your head around it.
Yeah. No. I just did not speak the same language. Like, literally, I think I was like trying to decipher a language. at that point. But yeah.
Tim, I don't know if you saw me post about this tiny, very short little indie thing called Forsworn. But it is a tribute to Animal Well.
I saw you post that.
And so it is a slavish tribute to Animal Well, to the degree that, like, it is very good and feels like DLC for Animal Well. And it's,
I think I did see that.
It's free, it's short, it's 30 minutes. You know, if that, I played it on one of my tiny little Linux handhelds, because it got ported to those. So that was great. And similarly, I'm playing a game that, Aftermath's Chris Person recommended called Microvania. And I guess this is a game I thought that people had heard. I'm not hearing anything else about this game besides seeing this one guy, because he's like, he posted about it. All he said was, Microvania is finally out. It's only $6 and it rules. So I was like, I went right to Steam and bought it just based on that alone.
Sure.
And it's a really chunky, by which I mean the pixels are huge. It's like built for a very low resolution, just a Metroidvania. More in the Metroid side, because it's she just parked herself right next to your head.
The one person that's allergic to cats.
That's how it be.
Miracle. Yeah.
It's fine. I'm medicated.
Marigold.
Just yet another space themed Metroidvania. It's I enjoy it. It's great. It's got a couple of real great tunes. But what I've really been spending, I think, the most time with is I got yet another one of these little, cheap handhelds. This one it's called the Mangmi Air X, and it's getting a lot of heat from the YouTubers that I follow because it is possibly the most power that's been offered at this price point so far. Mm-hmm. It's an Android-based device. It has a Snapdragon, an older Snapdragon in it that's maybe like 5 years old or so. So by today's standards, underpowered, but it is cheap. It's under $100. And what that level of power gets you is up to some GameCube and PS2 emulation, which until now you had to pay, I don't know, at least $120 for, and never in a widescreen form factor with like a big, really nice 1080p screen with all the bells and whistles, Hall effect triggers, Hall effect analog sticks, real solid build quality, really nice digital controls as well. It feels like a pretty nicely premium product. But the thing that's excited me most about it is I don't have an Android device. I don't have a lot of experience with Android. There's a new thing for Android that lets you play, that basically uses Proton to translate your Steam library on the fly to run on Android.
Okay.
The smoothest, there are a few implementations of this. One's called WinLater, one's called Game Native, but the one that seems to be the most popular is called Game Hub. It's by peripheral and controller maker GameSir, which up until this point has mostly made like telescopic controller vices for your phone.
Sure.
They make a couple of high quality, just regular controllers too. I like GameSir's products. I've had a few GameSirs. They're very good. So they've got this Android app called Game Hub. Mm-hmm. You download it. It's free. You log into your Steam library and there's all your Steam games.
Wow.
You download them and they run.
Wow.
That's it. Cloud saves and everything.
Wow, that's nice.
Pretty sick.
Yeah. So, you know, now because this device is underpowered, I've only tried a couple of like, you know, pretty low spec games, I think. Like UFO 50 runs near perfectly.
Yeah.
Say. And it took me a few tries to find like the version. I'm running a version of Game Hub called Game Hub Lite, which is made for lower spec devices. Spelunky. Sure. I've tried Spelunky and a couple other like pixel based games.
Like the soft glow of the blue and the pink.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very nice. Yeah, triggers. You can set the colors if you want.
Can you buy, because it's like the exact same size as Switch Lite?
Yeah.
Can you buy grips for it? Because I do find that I needed one for mine anyways.
This one's new enough that
I think comfortable to you?
No, it's new enough that probably no one has made grips for it yet.
Oh, okay. So it wouldn't be interchangeable, I suppose. It's different enough.
Every single one of these is different. When I buy grips for these, I buy them on Etsy. I buy them in a way that people have made a 3D printed.
I was going to say, you could probably 3D print.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is one of the more ergonomic ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, it's got a couple of little hand nubs. But, you know, my hope was that this would effectively be a $90 Steam Deck. It's not.
No.
But,
you already have a Steam Deck.
I know. But the newest Retroid Pocket, they just introduced the newest Retroid Pocket that replaces the 5, which was already a nicely powerful machine and could do PS2 and GameCube at full speed. It's a roughly $200 device. I think the new model is called the Retro Pocket G2 or something. I'm pretty sure that is a $200 Steam Deck or near enough to be a replacement. Maybe not for the highest end games that the Steam Deck can be coaxed into running, but for a lot of your Steam indie library, like this app, Game Hub, it runs well enough that I think it really does make some of these more powerful Android-based devices a lower-priced alternative to a Steam Deck at this point. So, I'm thinking if you were thinking about needing a Steam-based handheld, like a Retroid Pocket, the newest Retroid Pockets for around $200 is actually now a reasonable alternative because you can run your Steam games on it with cloud saves and everything. It's a miracle. It's a small miracle. So that's what I've been futzing with is getting the right drivers, matching the right drivers per game. Mm-hmm. There is still a little futzing around with that depending on your device. But man, when it works, it just works.
Nice. It's
another thing to go in your drawer in 4 months when you get another one.
Oh man, open up that drawer.
Oh, I saw it.
You saw inside that drawer?
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Why don't you get a cheap Thor?
Oh, geez.
Thor, I know you're eyeballing that thing.
They're on the list.
Yeah.
Like, I need to turn my playdate on again. I need it not to just be motivated by the seasons.
Yeah. You know? I need to get back into that after I finish Dig Dig Dying. I still got a lot of stuff to play on.
That one's so fun. I blew through that so fast.
Yeah.
What is this playdate game with the TV channels that's now coming to other platforms?
Blip.
Blip or Blip Plus.
Not Blippy.
Not Blippy.
No.
No, I think it's
Blippo.
Blippo TV Plus.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm thrilled.
It's a great weird thing.
It's a great weird thing. Like it's a perfect, like it coming to Steam was interesting to me because it feels so perfect for playdate because it is more toy than a game. Like, yeah. It's not a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're flipping between the channels. But, I mean, like, they're all genuinely funny and very varied. So it's almost, you know, it's parody UHF channels.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, not a game. Toy.
Yep, exactly.
Toy experience program thing.
But I would love to see them take something like that and make some kind of mechanic out of mm-hmm. it, you know? Even if it was just, like, one of the channels. Like, if one of them was hidden in there, imagine finding that.
Tim, well, if I can backtrack real quick, because this is something that just occurred to me. I deserve to be teased for all the little handhelds that I have.
Yeah, sure.
I find more and more... my youngest in particular mm-hmm. now, so she and I just played through Costume Quest.
Ooh,
I saw you playing Halloween Costume Quest.
Yeah.
The best Halloween game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she loved it. Loved it so much that she also got to the point where she can now turn on and navigate the Steam Deck just as easily mm-hmm. as she could the Switch. Up until really my kids, I'm in charge of the video games, so... Yep. Until fairly recently, they relied on me to do that, but mm-hmm. the 8-year-old just no longer gives a shit, and she's going to figure it out herself.
Yep.
So I'm seriously envisioning instances in my life now. So she wants to play more games like this. Mm-hmm. She wants to be able to try not only... She's like, what other games are there like Costume Quest? I'm like, really nothing. There's nothing that's quite like Costume Quest.
Not even Costume Quest 2.
No, that's why it's so special.
I mean, it's Costume Quest 2 is good, but, you know, like Tasha, I forget her name, that made the first game, you know, went off. I believe she went to Pixar. She went to Animation Studio.
Okay.
Yeah. Either she went to or she came from, but I believe she went back to, like, animation route.
Okay. Well, needless to say, I can envision a world in which... I might need a second handheld Steam device. Mm-hmm. And I'm not shelling out for a second Steam Deck, but if this is something I, you know, would want to have in my life anyway, a more powerful Android device that could also run mm-hmm. a lot of the Steam games she would want to play
mm-hmm,
and we can sit on the couch and do it to, you know, that's something that could be functional in my life.
Yeah.
I'm justifying this in real time.
It could be functional in my life too. Yeah. Because it's hard to get him, you know, I don't really let him touch the Steam Deck.
Yes, that's the other thing. I don't want them picking up the Steam Deck.
Yeah, I don't want him messing with the Steam Deck. I certainly don't want him like my computer.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, what do I do with him or what do I hand it to him? But his gaming habits are so hard to pin down anyways.
Yeah.
Because it's very like he does not stick with games. Like, he'll mm-hmm. try a bunch of stuff, but it's like it's probably the ADHD that's just like ping, 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 ping. It's very rare that he will stick. You know, it's like I pick up a game and I usually try to play. I play through it till I'm done with it, whatever that means, usually, or I'll have a plan where it's like, okay, I'm stopping this game, but I'm going to start it again later. Whereas he's just kind of like all over the place, and then he'll suddenly come back to something I don't know. It's just some things really catch him and some things don't. I guess.
No, I was trying to think of, like, what else I would say off of Costume Quest. I mean, stacking feels like kind of the obvious.
I've heard people say the Mario and Luigi games are maybe the closest analog, because what she wants, she doesn't want an RPG necessarily. No. She wants a comedy game.
Right.
Mario RPG.
Yeah, Mario RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah, super. I feel like that remake gets cheap pretty.
I have it.
Oh.
Put
that in front of her.
Yeah.
There you go. Richard didn't end up liking that. At all, even though I thought he was. It's so weak. So sometimes he'll be like, I don't know if he's like, I don't like RPGs, but then he'll be like, I kind of want to play an RPG. And I'm like, Richard, Pokemon is an RPG.
Yeah.
And you play so much.
It's
Pokemon.
A lot of people's first RPG for the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Or he's just going to play FIFA.
Another RPG.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, no, he's he recently, I mean, we've both been playing Ball Pit. You heard of Ball Pit?
I've heard of Ball Pit, but I don't know what Ball Pit
I heard
is.
Of it when you mentioned it earlier. Yeah. Otherwise, I have not.
Yeah, no, it's a Devolver Digital published game, which, you know, usually they publish things that are interesting, if not good. And this is like, it's kind of like a breakout sort of like alleyway, like that kind of ball breaker or block breaker game.
Oh, you're breaking my balls.
Breaking my balls here. but it has a
That was a ball pit break.
It's a roguelite run based deal with kind of like some Vampire Survivors DNA sprinkled all over it. And that, like, you know, you're a guy, you're a warrior.
Oh, yes.
Dave just Leo pointed at Tim sitting next to him. Like,
this game is on my wish list because I saw someone talk about it. It looks crazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like,
it's hard to visualize.
It's like a fantasy themed thing where it's okay, you start out you're a knight and you're going up, but you're not on like static levels. Like enemies get dropped in and they are like marching towards you.
Okay.
So it also has like a little bit of kind of like a Space Invaders, like bullet heck, not full bullet hell, but bullet heck feel to it, which is something that Richard's been struggling with because he hasn't played shooter games.
Time to learn.
And yeah, you'll shoot a ball off.
Oh, this is not the game that I thought it was.
Okay.
But it is, but I have seen people.
What's that? What are you talking about now? We're changing the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shoot your ball up and it bounces around, and as it hits enemies, it does damage. And then all the enemies will drop gems, which you pick up, and then you level up, and you get to pick out, like, a new ball. There's attack balls. There are passive things, which, again, that parallels Vampire Survivors, where you have, like, the passive items, and then you have the attack weapons. But then also, as you level them up, you can then evolve them and fuse them together. Again, it's kind of like a Vampire Survivors thing. Okay. So it's like you start to build your level. It's like, okay, I'm going to take this because I know it can fuse with that. Or I'm going to plan ahead of that because I know this can fuse with like a bunch of different things. So you start kind of planning your runs around like the weapons you pick up.
I see.
This is the game I thought you were describing. It's called Mega Bonk.
Oh, Mega Bonk. I got to play that game. That is a
third-person Vampire Survivor.
A lot of people.
That sounds like a UFO film.
With like a lot of cringe internet humor in it.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people that have around me that have been playing that. So that's on my wish list.
Gotcha.
But no, this is Ball Pit.
Yeah. We're not talking about this. We're talking about that.
So it's, you know, the levels.
My Mega Bonk.
The levels are finite. You get through three bosses, then you have defeated the level, and you know, your characters level up. You get gears, which there's like a lift that you use. You use the gears to upgrade your lift, so you can move. You get basically unlock more levels, and you get golden resources. So you're building out a base at the same time.
A lot of hooks. It sounds like
there's all kinds of hooks in there for this loop. So you're building a base. And as you build the base, you can unlock more characters, and you give your characters more bonuses.
Yep.
and so it's like you build the base, and then you harvest from it by shooting out your characters like balls through a breakout pinball field.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not something that I sit down and I play for like hours, but I sit down, I'll play like a couple runs, and I'm like, cool, and then I'll put it down, and then I'll come back. It's like, you know, tons of characters, tons of weapons to use.
I feel like I'd get pretty hooked to that. Like, I like breakout Arkanoid builds a lot.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. It seems like a game, just kind of judging by my group, that it's like you'll get really into, play through it, and then you'll be done with it, which is also fine. It's also totally good to be done with games.
Those are sometimes my favorites.
Yeah, I get to the end of it, and I think that's where I'm going to end up. I think I'm going to get to the end, see all the levels, maybe if there's credits at the end of it, and then I'll be like, okay, cool, good. What a good game I played for 10 hours. And yeah, so Richard's been into that as well.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's like he struggles with dodging the bullets. Even though it has different speed settings, I think maybe he just needs to turn it down to slow. Like you can do it on the fly in the level.
Mm-hmm.
Like okay, I'm crushing this, so I'm going to crank up the speed so I get through it faster. Or you can just turn it down because, like, this is hard and you need to dodge bullets a little more. So that's cool.
Yeah. You got more games?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Here, I'll just run through. I mean, some of them I'll probably talk about at greater length next month during our Game of the Year proceedings.
But we don't know which one.
Yeah. Well, no, I finished Silksong, which was good and took me a long time to get through, and I don't know why. And I'm like, is this how Weiss plays games?
like looking around confused
all
the time.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. Well, I feel like so many times in the history of this podcast, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that game took me like 80 hours. Yeah. And I was like, how? And you'd be like, how wouldn't you? And and it's,
I mean, Alan Wake 2, the first run. I mean, like, I was looking everywhere and got lost a lot, but also, you know, 35 hours.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, second run, I'm like, I'll be done in 10, 15, probably. Yeah. But
But just seeing that, like, oh, most people were getting through Silksong in like 40 hours, and it somehow took me 60, and I don't know why. I think it's a lot of it is just I had a, and some of this I'll blame on the game, and some of this I'll blame on myself, where it's like they do such a, they hide stuff everywhere.
That's the thing.
But it means you miss stuff everywhere. You couldn't miss stuff everywhere. And I think I'm being thorough, but I'm not. So I'm missing, like, I'm not getting like certain weapons or upgrades or stuff until like later, and it's making the game harder earlier on.
Yep.
Like, I didn't in this one town, I just didn't realize, like, oh, there's people living in bells hanging up above here, and one of them is the guy who will upgrade your weapon. And so by the time I finally found him, I upgraded it twice in a row. And I'm just like, oh shit, that
but
probably
until then you struggle bust for a while.
I'm like, man, this is rough. Yeah. Like, everything takes so many hits. That's like, oh shit. And then it gets really easy. And then just like a lot of time kind of in the middle of the game wandering around because there was like a switch hidden in the dark portion of a room that I didn't realize I needed to hit in order to access an area. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm trying not to look stuff up online. Then I finally look it up and I'm like, oh, well, Jesus fuck.
Of course.
And it's like, oh, this area you can get into, but like it's a hidden wall in this area that like I would never go by more than once. I'm just like, oh, and there's other ways in there. There's like every place has multiple ways of getting into it, but it's just like I think my particular route through the game ended up being a bit to my detriment.
Yeah,
at certain points. So it's weird because I kind of want to get back in there and replay it just now that I have knowledge and enjoy it more.
For sure,
so you do it right.
Yeah,
do it right. And I saw credits roll on Hades 2, but boy, I keep playing that game.
Oh, yeah.
That game's just real fucking good.
Can't wait.
Just keep going back to it.
Boy, maybe another Black Friday. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like Hades 1 never really got all that cheap, and Hades 2 might be the same probably for a while.
Yeah. I bought it on a sale. What? Did I buy it on a sale, or did I? I don't remember.
I feel like they never went on like super sale, things do. I finished Death Stranding. I circled back to that after Silksong, as I told myself I would. Yeah, that game's crazy, and of course, you know, I had mostly cutscene left when I had walked away from it.
Yeah.
Really, there was like... There were still like a few sections I had to like traipse through, but
I see.
Yeah, there was and they do make you walk back across the entire map at the end, which I was like, oh, of course they make you do this.
Because I kind of expected that.
Yeah, just to see like all the stuff that I had built on the way out.
It seems thematic too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Made total sense. They're like, they had even like Jimmy some reason where it's like, oh yeah, you can't just use the quick travel to go there. You gotta walk, Sam. Okay. Like, okay. All right. Yeah. I got it. I didn't do a ton of side stuff in that game because I anticipate playing Death Stranding 2 soon, so I don't want to get burnt out on it. But yeah, the story in that game is wild because it's seems like it's completely batshit and will make no sense, and then somehow it comes together in the end and does make sense, even though it's all crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just have Guillermo del Toro talking to you.
I was going to use that as a transition.
Yeah, a lot. And just like...
Oh, I didn't realize he was in it that much.
He's in it a lot. He's in like the whole game.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, he doesn't voice the character, just modeled after him. But it's just like, you know...
Oh, that's going to be weird.
Oh, it's super weird.
I'm so used to his friendly voice.
Especially moments when it's just like, oh yeah, Guillermo del Toro steps in the shower with you fully clothed. You're not fully clothed. Because
hello, adventurer.
Yeah, he needs to talk to you where like the whatever, they no one else can hear you. So he's there's a whole thing throughout the where it's like he's a little bit too a bit of a close talker that makes your character Sam very uncomfortable because he doesn't like people touching him at all. It's just there's reasons behind that, and just like there's so much like just funny, very Kojima stuff.
Yeah.
In that game, it like Mads Mikkelsen is through that whole game.
Oh, very important. That
character.
One I figured.
Yeah, and he's he voices his character.
I would hope so.
Yes. Yeah, he does.
I mean, I love Guillermo, but like watching him host like Cabinet of Curiosity and such, like acting, I could see why they. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple where they just like took their likeness. You know, Conan O'Brien is in it very briefly.
Yeah.
And he voices himself.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, it's a wild, but it's cool. It's a weird, boring, but like super engaging game.
No, I'm excited too.
Wild story to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I really need to talk about.
Multiple coworkers going through that as well. I feel like people took the praise for Death Stranding 2 as an excuse to finally play Death Stranding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was the time.
That's what it was for me. I was just like, shit, I'm behind. I let it slide for too long.
Yeah.
Also, funny note, the receipt, there's a receipt in that I gave Weiss a copy of Death Stranding. The receipt is, because I bought that game used at GameStop in a buy two, get one,
mm-hmm.
Which was like a big score for me. I got that and like two other like full price games. I don't remember what the other, I think one of them was Jedi Survivor. And I'm just like, I saw the receipt. I'm like, this guy bought this game and then traded it in like a week later. Because I think I was like, right. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe somebody already traded in Death Stranding, but maybe I can believe it.
Yeah. I was
going to
say.
Yeah. That person just picked it up and was like, nope.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope. Straight out of it.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to,
sure.
The easy one, because you mentioned the movie you saw.
Del Toro. Yeah,
saw some Del Toro. Did you get to see it in the theater?
No, Lauren went to see it in the theater.
I haven't yet. I know it's still playing in my area, so I might. Because it's pretty.
Pretty. Jan and I tried to make a movie date out of it, but it was not playing at a time when we could see it. Sure. So we saw Bugonia instead, which I'll be delighted to talk about. And I have not. Part of it is I haven't had time to watch it at home, but I also had to sort of make sure, like, sweetie, did you want to watch this movie or did you just want a date with me? And I had to confirm with her, like, no, I really just wanted a date with you. You go ahead and watch that on your own. So now that I have permission, once I find some time to watch it at home,
I don't know Jan's taste on it. I feel like she would like maybe 85% of it, but also Guillermo is a naughty boy and likes to throw in some things without warning. I don't know. I did read a decent review that was just sort of like he was naughty there, but like, I don't know. He could have been more playful in some spots, but it was just like, it was wild that he like, cause most of the movie is pretty PG-13.
Like there's sudden shifts where like someone gets like their face ripped off and you're like, holy shit. I forgot it's that kind of movie.
Right.
Like very suddenly.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. It will get incredibly graphic.
Yes. I mean, like I started laughing just at like the level of it,
but that's not the movie. It's just like, there's moments that are like,
Well, and you know, like I know sort, you know, like because it's going back to like, it's not a body horror movie, but he wants to remind you that these are, you know, he's made of corpses.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
You know, like there
that's what I've heard people say. It's way more Crimson Peak than.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, very much. Like it's like he switched cinematographers, I think, around that time.
Okay.
His costumer is just incredible. It's like the best costumes I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, whatever you think about the movie, like, it's just a stunner for 2.5 hours. but yeah, no, I really liked it. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, like, structurally, I thought it was the most interesting thing is it switches points of view halfway through.
Yes.
Wait, what? So you fucking saying that it's not structurally interesting?
God damn it.
That's the one reason I wanted to see this movie.
I know.
Fuck you, Guillermo.
I know. Oh, I worded that so well. I was so good at that. I want to watch it again now that I know what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I only watched it at home as well. So I would like to see it on a screen. But Tim, what did you think?
Oh, no, I really liked it. Yeah. It is visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Really flew by.
The pacing was great. Sorry, Jacob Elordi, you're going to have to play monsters for the rest of time. You're kind of in a Doug Jones spot. He's really, really good.
Wuthering Heights is coming right out, right? Like, I mean, he's...
Oh, okay. I've only seen him in a couple... Yeah, I don't even know what I've seen him in technically at this point.
Okay. Like, I I saw a poster for Wuthering Heights at the theater where we went to see Bugonia, and I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, there's the monster. That's him. Oh, okay. That must be the other thing that people know him for. And I was surprised to discover, oh, wait, no, that's not out yet. People, you know, he'll be in Frankenstein first,
yeah.
and then Wuthering Heights, mm-hmm. where he mm-hmm. gets to just be British and smoldering, presumably.
Yes, yes.
And so, yeah, I'm just surprised that, like, so back-to-back in
yeah.
terms of those
That's
releases.
How it be sometimes.
For
I
him.
Know.
So, yeah, people will get to know him as just a regular dude, presumably.
Like, I mean, most people I've talked to is just kind of like, Oscar Isaac is great, but, like, Elordi steals it performance-wise.
Yeah.
Mia Goff's character is kind of like the one that got changed a little bit from the book, which is good, I think. I don't know the original text, unfortunately. I should.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of like, oh, maybe I should read the book.
I know. I really want to. And like go back through, especially like rewatch Bride of Frankenstein is a great like that movie holds up like mother. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I liked how it, you know, it kind of started out at the end. Like you could almost do an Oberdin type game based on
Oh,
this.
There was I forget if it was no, there was a news story that someone did an Oberdin joke off of. But yeah, it's been on my mind for especially with the ship and the,
The ship and it's cold and whatever trying to
Well it's but, it just starts out with like showing his power and then like peeling things back was really cool.
Yeah, because it's you know very much a movie about relationships you know and not about this the monstrous horrible science as much
it's you know like if you know Guillermo del Toro's you know like he doesn't have monsters, he has creatures. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the article, but like one you know criticism, even less slight criticism, is like because it's so on the creature's side, it does kind of take the tragedy out of it a little bit, which I could feel that.
Yeah.
But, obviously a lot of love and care to that. great design. And, you know, it's one of those things where you know he's been wanting to make this since he was young. It's kind of the same thing as Nosferatu last year's. Eggers wanted to make that. Yep.
Weird.
Yep. I know. Two guys that have like kind of made their whole, you know, this has been the core and they got to make their dream projects, their dream monster movies that happen to be Universal Monster movies. Yeah. I don't care about multiverses. I mean, I'm sure that they would love to do big things with that, but and you know you got Maggie Gyllenhaal has got a Frankenstein movie coming out in like a month too. I don't know about that trailer.
Timing.
Yeah, I know. It's big and pulpy, so hopefully it's fun. I just thought the trailer was like cheeseball.
Oh yeah, the trailer definitely. Well, I think that the trailer definitely felt like doing her level best to pitch this at a wide audience and get wide audience to go and see what looks like a weird as hell movie.
For sure. Like it's just funny that it's pitched as like Kill Bill or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, because when I think about people know who Maggie Gyllenhaal is, but I don't think she necessarily
has cultivated
a brand as a director, right? So like we don't know what to expect from a Maggie Gyllenhaal movie other than we know that she's a capable director, surely.
Yeah. I mean, her last movie was, you know, small independent movie people saw and regular people didn't.
Oh, it was the Olivia Colman movie, right? Yeah.
That movie was great.
That was a great movie. Yeah.
I was trying to think of the name of it off the top of my head.
I cannot
Lost
think of the name
something,
of it,
but
I, oh, The Lost Girl, The Lost Child, The Lost
I
The
mean,
Lost
it,
Daughter. The Lost daughter.
That's what it was. Yeah. It was the kid lost on the beach.
Yeah.
It was Olivia Colman yelling at kids in the movie theater because that scene rules. I don't have much else pointed to say about the movie. On a great score too.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's nice to have a sweeping 2.5 hour. But again, pacing was good. Like I haven't heard anybody in person really have like a negative opinion on it at this point, which is great. And like regular ass people are watching it, much like Sinners. So
yeah,
good year for horror.
Yeah. Also weird year for like Netflix movies going into theaters and then coming out of theaters or whatever. Because it's like, the new Knives Out is in that like same soon.
Yeah, hopefully when I've already seen friends that are seeing it right now. Like Austin's a weird one where you've got like some theaters get it like super early and some do not. So I'm just sort of like, is this, you know, the Regal is close to me. So I get, you know, like that's what I do the Regal pass because I can literally walk there.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Frankenstein is not playing there, unfortunately. Just the independent theaters.
Yeah, I don't know. Because Frankenstein was only at North Park in Buffalo. Yes. And I don't know if Knives Out's going to be at other ones. But we'll see.
Yeah. No, I'll definitely see that in next week or two, if that's an option. But
I don't think it's on the Flicks till December, like the first week of December.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Bugonia.
Bugonia.
Yeah. So I
this is where I'm going to pee.
Sure. Sure. With the huge caveat that like, I was eager to see this so that I could talk to you about it.
Sure.
Because
this is so loaded. Yeah.
As much as I've been meaning to, I still just have not gone back and seen like most of Yorgos's movies.
Have you seen The Favorite?
Yes. Okay. That's the one. But I still have not seen Poor Things. I still have not seen Kinds of Kindness.
Right.
So like he's got this body of work now that and you know I loved The Favorite and like it got me really excited.
That's still my favorite.
Okay. The Favorite's your favorite.
Favorite.
Sorry to belabor the point. But part of it is that, and part of it is just sort of the thing where, like, I think my spouse would enjoy these movies if I could convince her to watch it, or do I take the time to watch them myself?
Yeah.
So that's why they've kind of not, we haven't seen them, I immediately saw parallels between this movie and The Favorite in terms about it being a power dynamic in terms of, like, someone has power. What are the clever ways that the person who currently does not have power leverages the power that they do have in order to exercise their own power? You know, it's a really interesting study in that.
I think he really likes platform shifts like that. And I think like that The Favorite played with that the most because it was just sort of like, you've got power, now you've got, you know, kept switching. Did you know going into Bugonia that it was a remake?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have seen the original Save the Green Planet, and it's shockingly very close.
That's what I've heard. I even saw someone say, like, not only is it shockingly close, but in some ways better.
Yeah, I would say, like, I really liked Save the Green Planet, but I think, like, it was... you could see the seams. It was a little shaggy,
okay,
I guess.
Yeah, sure.
The way I could see it. And like I was interested to talk to you about this too, because I thought that Bugonia specifically feels like a play more than a lot of his work. Because I mean it's really a three person, one location thing for like a lot of it. And like I mean Plemons is really good, I thought.
So, yes, I had the exact same thought.
Yeah.
That it more than anything, it really did feel like it. And it's almost a two-hander.
Yeah.
If not for, you know, the extra third person who is there, whose presence is there more to facilitate, you know, the turns of the plot than anything else.
Well, and also to kind of like to me it was kind of like seeing like how Plemons interacted with him told me a lot about Plemons and
exactly, you know, like that, Plemons has a vulnerable person and that is his that is important to the power dynamic shift what I find what struck me at first I guess the most surface level thing that strikes me is I love Jesse Plemons' work. And I love it because he's so natural.
Yes.
He's so good at like bringing the level of intensity that he does to his roles but still seeming incredibly natural and grounded.
Even that line read from, I didn't see Civil War, but the, you know, the trailer, you know, hook was him just giving that dry line at the end. And you're like, ooh.
And it's terrifying, right? So that's something that he obviously excels at naturally. Yeah. And to see him, I guess, paired with Emma Stone, Emma comes, you can see it, incredibly talented actress, but by comparison, you see how her performance is far more actorly. Compared to someone like, I never got the feeling that they were in two different movies, though, because that serves Emma's character. Like,
I was going to say, like, I guess I didn't think about it, but because her character is putting on facades.
Yes, it's all it's all performative.
Right.
And so that's not, and, you know, I've always liked Emma Stone's, I've never felt that Emma Stone's, any of her other performances in any of the movies I've seen her were false, but maybe it's that the roles that she gets are necessarily more in that performative actorly style than the real, just, I'm a real dude, Jesse, the roles that Jesse Plemons tends to take on.
I do, like, if you get to Poor Things, I'm really interested. I mean, like, it's a fascinating, I mean, it's another Frankenstein movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's Emma Stone playing, the, you know, playing like the creature, child, a creature. Yeah. How you would feel about that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of it looking back, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I guess the... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had just seen a play at Jiva that was a two-hander.
Okay.
With Julia. And I was, unfortunately, found it very boring because...
They can be.
And what it didn't do that by contrast Bugonia did so expertly is navigate those turns of shifting power dynamics so that it's always propelling the action forward, even when there's not much action, even when it's just two people talking to each other. Those shifts need to happen in order to continually hook your interest.
I think, like, I was noticing, like, Yorgos is really good at, like, letting the big beats be the relationship, the performance, but also, like, I'm always afraid of these types of three people in a room. Like, I tend not to like people in a room movies, but, like, he does it cinematically without those covering up, without it being like, oh, nothing big has happened in a while, we need to, like, look at something fancy. Like, they were motivated. I mean, like, it's still a good looking movie, he moves the camera well, but it's not there to cover up mistakes or anything, you know.
And I guess ultimately, I mean, what that really comes down to is writing, right? Is that if you have written a piece well so that all of the dialogue is in service of putting you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
So that you're like, oh, shit, every, not necessarily that every exchange is a bombshell, but every exchange is at least meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, the dialogue is the action. Yep. It is. Yep. It's part of the excitement of watching. I mean, you know, the live theater that does that really well is like David Mamet. And, so it was really instructive for me to see a piece, a live theater piece that unfortunately did not. And I was really rooting for it, too. It was a really interesting piece about two sisters. And the thrust of it is that they cook a meal live on stage in front of you over the course of the show.
What is that called?
It's called Sancocho.
Okay.
Which is a traditional Puerto Rican stew.
Okay.
And so, but it too often it just sort of wallows in, I don't want to say wallows in characterization, but takes a too great pains to let the dialogue point out more about I'm the older responsible sister and I'm the younger responsible sister, instead of letting the dialogue serve a physical propulsive purpose. You know, it's the dialogue should be the engine on which the hinges turn, and not just, you know, obviously, yes, you need some exposition, but it's so much of it. has to be expository in these two-person things. Yep. They're like, wait a minute, are you saying that mom never liked you more?
Exactly.
You know, that's just,
I was having the same thought.
Stuff.
I'm just like, that's the hard thing with like a mono scene or, you know, like something like that, where it's just sort of like, oh, you're going to tell me what you're doing because you can't, like, you don't have different situations that you're tested in to,
right,
like,
yeah,
show those. Yeah.
There was never a moment in Bugonia where I felt like, mm-hmm, this scene just exists for exposition. There are always,
yes,
stakes.
Yep, yep, yep.
There's always an investment in the character. The scene where Jesse Plemons is giving his cousin, mm-hmm, the chemical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, stakes.
Yeah.
Just he's describing what he's doing. That's what's happening. It is expository, but stakes.
And the ending is exactly what you want. like if I'm writing this, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you know what? I guess it can be seen as... At first, I wasn't sure whether to feel like maybe it was a cop-out in place of an ending that was somehow tighter and more bombshelly. But honestly, no, that is the only place that could go.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like it's not a tight wrap it in a bow kind of movie.
No.
Unfortunately, that's just not what it is. But it just being like, is it? Isn't it? Yeah, we're gonna make the fun choice.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's definitely the fun choice.
Yeah,
it is. Let's just fucking ride this fucker out.
Yeah,
until we fall off.
Which again, I have to rewatch it, but the original, yeah,
yeah. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, really liked it.
Yeah. Nope. Same. You didn't get to see One Battle After Another, right, yet? Neither of you?
That was another movie that I tried to get. We were looking at what movies
just
were
desperately
playing.
Desperately trying to get your wife out of the house.
We had dinner reservations at a certain time, so we had time constraints. And like,
sure.
How late are we willing to stay out and while the girls are at home alone?
Gotcha.
And I had to play her the trailer. Yeah. For One Battle After Another, because I'm like, it's you know, the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Who's that?
What? You've
seen his movies before. They're all really good. But like, that trailer did nothing for her in terms of making her want to be interested in seeing it, because it does not look like her kind of movie. But also, it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, and so
I know it. Well, it's. Well, one, it's incredible. Like that. That's like the best thing I've. That's in the running right now. But I was not big on Licorice Pizza like that. And I think that movie is going to be a blip.
I ever got to see Licorice Pizza.
That's fine. There was a weird spot of racism in there that I can't think of his name from Christopher Guest movies with three names, but does a voice on Korra, whatever. Basically does like a Charlie Chan voice at one point, like straight up, and like the audience is like
John Michael Higgins.
Yeah. Like there's like does it, and I'm just sort of like, oh, they're gonna be like, this is bad, and nope, they just move on, and I'm just sort of like, and then Paul Thomas Anderson gave like a non-answer afterwards, and I'm just like, just left a bad taste, so I wasn't even gonna see this. But like, this movie kind of just rules across the board. Mm. Like I read a good piece about it, just, you know, like what impressed me the most is that the slightly easier choice would have been to set this in the 70s and let it be an analogy, but making it a present movie about right now from one of the best filmmakers right now feels really prescient. It feels like one of the only movies about what's happening right now. And I only really like Leo when he is the schlub. When he can be the protagonist but not the hero.
Which he's been doing.
Yeah. I mean it's the same with Killers of the Flower Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And Benicio del Toro is just like back to natural. It's like incredibly charismatic, and he's just being himself. Like, that's it. but it's the most watchable like thing. And yeah, that movie flies by like pacing wise, like nothing. It's a really, I was worried about how it was going to tell a story about revolutionaries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that did that really well. You can't help but think about Paul Thomas Anderson's marriage to Maya Rudolph with like the children and the marriage and like how all that stuff works. And there's a car chase at the end that's shot so interestingly.
Oh, man.
That's so good. Another great score, you know, like just across the board. Like it's going to be an easy watch. And it's another one based off a Pynchon book.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people kind of forget that both Inherent Vice and Big Lebowski are based off the same book. So
wait, what?
Yep. Yep.
This is news to me.
Yep. That's the Coen brothers don't do adaptations, but it's inspired by, like, it is that it's a loser bouncing around LA.
Wow.
Yep. So like this being another Pynchon book, it still in a way has a little Lebowski to it.
Wow.
There's
very weird to think about.
Yep. Maybe if you're maybe only if you're looking for it. I have not read Pynchon. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're for bookshelves. The joke has been made, just you know, can't say enough good stuff.
This is a movie that I had sort of made it once Jan decided it was not for her.
Yeah.
I had made a quiet little promise to myself that like, all right, I'm gonna take a day and afternoon while everyone else is at school, and I'm gonna go see this movie by myself. Mm-hmm. And it unfortunately is a promise that I no longer think I can keep, just given my daytime obligations that are coming up between now and like Christmas. Yeah.
It'll be on a streamer soon.
It will, but I also know that it's not done great in theaters, which is what I'm hearing. And I've heard people say, like, if you can, please give it your movie theater ticket dollars.
I think it's in that spot where, like, it sounds pretentious. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson has three names. He's a known director. Yeah. You know, like, it's I think about this with Scorsese a lot because, like, people think of him as, you know, like regular people think of him as pretentious, and which is so funny thinking about like where he started. You know, like these guys that just like make the movies that they wanted to on like shoestrings. They just happen to be really good.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah, that trailer makes it look like that it is a mainstream general audience's action movie starring two, you know, white man middle-aged stars that people our age know and hold in high regard, and so you'd think that that would be enough.
I know. It in a way it does feel kind of like a 90s throwback. Like it is easy breezy. Like this is something you would have seen on TV in the 90s, you know, like, and those movies are good, you know.
Yeah.
Like Desperado's great. Like it's not like that level of action, but when he does action, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Of course, like there's like one, you know, like about maybe like 20-30 minutes in, there's a shot where like somebody's like a couple people driving in a car, and there's this is what I wanted to say. Yeah. Because when I was watching it, it felt like a modern video game where you're going around, you're playing something, and you see something in the background and you don't think about it, and then you realize that it's important, that it's that it somehow becomes very key. And this to me was like, he's driving around, you see some kids on skateboards in the background, and it's a long shot, and eventually they like it's like one shot and they skate in and they start talking and then they skate off, and I'm just like, it's just very impressive. In that sense, it was just sort of like, oh, I didn't know that that was part of the scene. Okay, cool. Like stuff like that. That's just like, that can casually go on kind of like when you see like people break down like Spielberg, like, Warners, and you're like, oh, right, that was one shot. Like, didn't even know. Like it enhanced in that way. But yeah, no, it's a stunner. And like it's kind of annoying. Your film friends have talked to you about this movie. Yes. Like, I understand. but also let that go a little bit. Like, it's also fun. It's surprisingly funny movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, all Paul Thomas Anderson's movies are generally intensely watchable and fun. And
There's a whole subplot that I'm not even going to talk about because I just want you to walk into it and, and we will talk about it afterwards. Like, it's killing me not to. But yes. Let me see. Any other movies from other people?
I don't have movies, but I wanted to ask if you'd been watching The Chair Company.
Oh, no, I heard that was good. No, I haven't seen that.
I think was more bullish on Friendship, the movie he did with Paul Rudd earlier this year.
Which I did not get to see.
Than a lot of other people. I really liked it, and I thought it was really effective.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've seen people say The Chair Company is what that movie should have been. And that is true.
Like, okay.
I still really like Friendship. I still think it's really worth seeing.
Yeah, I was going to say, most people came back pretty positive.
Yeah, yeah. In a lot of ways, The Chair Company does a lot of the same things that that movie did.
Yeah.
But better.
I see.
Doesn't negate Friendship in any way, but it is undeniably true. It is very much, it is way more a vehicle for Tim Robinson and Zach Kanin's comedy than Friendship could have been being written by someone else.
I see.
And it feels...
Tim Robbins. I haven't seen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tim Robinson, not Tim Robbins.
Not Tim Robbins. No.
I was like, if you got Tim Robinson and Tim Robbins together, I'm into
Sparks
it.
Sparks would fly.
I'm into it.
No, this feels more like a more accurate and a more successful long form version of an I Think You Should Leave sketch.
Okay.
It's got fucking Jim Downey. You know, the SNL legend, just there, along with all the sort of little like weird side character actors that are memorable from I Think You Should Leave sketches. Like, you'll see people in roles here be like, I remember him as that weirdo from that sketch.
Yeah.
You know, he's a different kind of weirdo here, and it's wonderful. Just lots of wonderful weirdos and grounded by Lake Bell, who I always like to see things. As his wife. And it's great. It's really, really great.
I'm writing you a note that I will read after you see One Battle After Another.
Okay.
After this conversation.
Saving it, sending it to future me so I can...
Well, right. I'm not actually sending it to you because you'll actually read it. But.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. I love that.
Yeah. Well, it's such shorthand that will be funny later. Yes.
That'll be a fun conversation in the future.
Yeah. I don't have too much to say on it, but like kind of off of performance and we're on TV. I don't think you've seen The Lowdown yet.
No.
Okay, so that's the new one from Sterling Harjo, the
Reservation Dogs.
Great, and one of my favorite performances this year, Ethan Hawke and Peter Dinklage as brothers for one episode, and it is good.
Who is in this show?
So it's Ethan Hawke, it's Kyle MacLachlan, and Keith David, fucking stacked cast.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Have I not heard of this?
That's why I like talking. It's really good. It's like small town corruption shit. It's another, not to Lebowski everything, but like Ethan Hawke is kind of, you know, like fumbly bumbly, around like small town Oklahoma.
Love that.
It's kind of like... He's a journalist with some ethics. How about it? And, you know, kind of fighting underground Nazis in a way. But like, it's really, really well done. I just really like how Sterling Harjo writes jokes. Like,
yeah,
his sense of humor is just really interesting and the way he presents it. You know what I mean? Some great performances are there. And, the other show that you haven't seen, I asked about before, but Pluribus is the show now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good. It's kind of X-Files Vince popping his head in a way. Like, haven't seen him do a sci-fi, and, you know, like, it's... what the hell was it? Last Man on Earth-ish. I guess, in terms of like that isolation, like it's, ooh, I'm blanking on her name from Better Call Saul.
Ray Seahorn.
Yeah, Ray Seahorn.
So I'm very much in the camp that like she should have won every award, and
well, guess what? Because she's probably, they're probably going to do like the late award for will at least be a contender in this one.
She's at the point where I would see her in anything because was so amazing in Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, yep. I've been very excited to watch this vehicle that is just for her. She deserves it.
Exactly.
And the new Vince Gilligan. Yes, this is something I'm very, very excited for.
Yeah, you don't have to sell anybody on, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
But it lives up to, like, it's making the smart choices where it's just sort of like, oh, this would be an obvious thing. Oh, you're doing that. That's interesting. Mm. You know, and you still, it's, I think it probably works really well for a mainstream audience in that it has mystery box hooks. But it does the thing. The only thing I want is like, as long as the story's good outside of the mystery box stuff,
yeah,
it's good. Yeah. So,
and of course it would be with Vince Gilligan at the helm.
Yeah.
So here's the broader context of that for me, and I alluded to this a little bit. I've let most of my streaming subscriptions expire.
I didn't
subscribe to
this,
almost anything anymore.
Yeah, no, I had to go out of my way.
Okay.
Apple TV has always been a problem anyways because you can't share passwords versus other streamers for me. So that's why I don't tend to watch Apple TV stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just about to look up what the lowdown is streaming.
Oh,
on.
That's FX. So that's Hulu/ the other things that have. It might be on Amazon, but you know, I think it's in the Disney Hulu family.
Yeah,
which
we recently let go of.
Yep.
For reasons.
Obvious reasons.
Well,
yes.
I mean, well, to be fair, yeah, for the obvious reasons, but also I had like an incredible Black Friday rate from last year. I was paying $3 a month for both Hulu and Disney Plus.
Yeah, no, we
$3
total.
Right.
Yeah, we did something like that as well, and it's about to run out next month or this month.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, next week.
Yeah,
so,
for
yeah,
us it,
yeah,
it
we're
ran
gonna
out
be,
a
we're gonna be
while.
Canning it and pairing that excising that from the system anyways. Yeah.
But I suspect that there's gonna be Black Friday streaming deals, and so close to this time next week, I may have some of those streaming services back.
Yeah,
depending on how much Disney can tempt me. You know, not that the kids really only missed The Simpsons from Disney Plus. They loved having Simpsons ready at the fingertips.
Sure.
But we obviously, there's a lot of shows on Hulu. And it makes sense that Sterling Harjo would be going back to FX.
And apparently I'm a sucker for, I like FX as a studio and like for the most part, like I'm good with like most FX shows.
When The Bear comes back, I gotta watch that. And, you know, whatever the next season.
I
of
mean,
Alien
Earth.
Yeah,
I was gonna
Alien
say.
Earth.
Was,
So yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff that I need to see there. But I think just yesterday, Violet was asking me about like, do we get Paramount Plus? And I had to say like, not anymore.
Yeah.
Why? Is there something on there you want to watch? It's the episode of iCarly. featuring a guy that I just worked with at the theater in his drag persona as Rosé.
Mm-hmm.
He was on an episode of iCarly.
Oh, cool.
We can only watch that on Paramount Plus.
Yep.
That episode, at least. She's been watching iCarly otherwise.
Yeah.
So, there's stuff that right now we're in a bit of a streaming desert at the moment, but also like it's been instructive about like, well, what do we really watch, guys? Yeah. And the truth is, it's one show on every streaming service.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm kind of surprised, just as the DIY person, you haven't gone into the Plexiverse.
Plex, it's not that it stymies me. It's that Plex requires, at least my understanding of Plex, the last time I seriously looked at it 10 years ago, was that Plex was great if you had a local collection of files,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
which is not something I want
yeah.
or want to manage. I
Similarly, I wanna, yes. That's, yeah. that's why I don't.
See, I have a friend with one. So.
Yes. Ah, yeah. that's, most of my friends have a friend with one.
Yes.
I don't know if anyone knows one directly. But
yeah, you just need one guy and then you're good. You don't need it yourself.
Yeah,
you just
exactly.
need to have the one person.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough. Well, it's like every streaming service is like expensive a month.
Yep.
Like nothing's really cheap unless you're getting like yeah. an ad tier now. Otherwise, it's like $20 or you got to like buy it for the year. And it's yeah. just like, yeah, we need to. You only yep. have so many of those.
Yeah. No, I mean, I literally only have like that I pay for is Netflix and Criterion. And Criterion mm-hmm. is totally worth it. Netflix, yeah, yeah. I have for my mom, you yeah. know, like, so it's hassle free.
Yeah. I think it's once again an illustration of the fact that, like, you know, streaming services were in this perfect point where they were more convenient than piracy and priced yeah. right enough to get people to give up mm-hmm. piracy.
Yep. Yep.
And now they're not anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's
yep. you
know, the convenience is a huge factor for me. I don't yeah. sit and watch shows in one location. I yeah. would need a Plex type server mm-hmm. to be able to stream these things everywhere we watch them, whether it's here in the living room or upstairs in our bedroom
yeah,
or downstairs
sure.
when I'm running on my elliptical machine, because that's where I consume a lot of media
makes sense.
Is on a tablet that's sitting on my elliptical machine.
Yeah.
So I would need something like Plex to handle that for me. Then you're paying for a Plex subscription. So
yeah, yeah.
They fucking get you anyway.
They get you.
Yeah.
I know. Because they never figured out how to make money. Like, otherwise, like, advertising didn't really, like, you know, they were just like, we'll get rid of advertising. Now, advertising's.
What if we had advertising?
What if we had advertising?
We could make so much more money.
Yeah. I think Netflix is getting advertising next year? Like,
They already had it.
Oh, do they already have it?
We have the advertising Netflix tier now because so much cheaper.
Gotcha.
We don't love it, but
yeah.
This is funny. I was having this every once in a while. My kids get deeply curious and want to know like what's going on in the world. They have very pointed questions. And last night at the dinner mm-hmm. table, we had a wide ranging conversation about AI, and it was great to get to explain to everyone at the table.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is the business model for AI? Well, they don't actually have the business model. Is you propose it as uh-huh. this thing that's going to change, because that's what my kids hear is. Julia came at me with the perspective of like, well, like, I mean, I think it's here to stay. It is here. And so, and I'm like, we say it's here to stay because that's what Sam Altman tells the venture
yes.
capitalists in order
yes.
to get money.
Yep.
That's the business model, is positioning it as a thing that is inevitable.
Yep.
So please give me money for it. It is not a profitable business.
No.
And so like, and when Jan had to do a work training in which they made them do Ugh. Like an icebreaker activity where they had to use generative AI, write a poem with ChatGPT.
Right.
And she didn't want to do it, you know, but but she was also at the point where like, but it's here and people use it. So what is the degree of inevitability? Yeah. And I was kind of like, well, think about like Google Maps, right? Google Maps displaced a lot of the prior. There was a whole cottage industry of mm-hmm. dedicated GPS devices that Google Maps eradicated.
Yeah.
And one mm-hmm. can make the argument that like, we don't use maps anymore. We've offloaded that part of our mm-hmm. brain to it. But like, a big part of the reason why Google Maps is still here is because it's not a profitable project of a company that has many other revenue streams.
Right.
Mm. Right. Google Maps is heavily subsidized by the other ways that Google makes money. Whereas OpenAI
mm-hmm.
does not have those alternate revenue streams.
Yeah.
I mean, it does with their high priced tiers that they pitch to businesses and,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, organizations, but even those tiers are ridiculous. That's not profitable for them
yep.
to charge. What is it? $20,000 a year for the highest tiers of ChatGPT for businesses to use.
I'm not in the market, so I don't know.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
That ostensibly is the profit model. It is.
Yeah.
No, I mean, not in no way is it profitable. So the inevitability totally stems from Sam Altman's ability to convince yeah. venture capital. And so that was a unique thing. That was
yep.
great to get to explain that to my kids, that
yeah.
like some businesses are, that's what we call a bubble.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, I do listen to a podcast from the Center for Humane Technology about just like not, you know, one, getting rid of the inevitability. It's the same people that made like the Social Dilemma. So it's like, okay, well, we fucked up with social network or social media. How can we like at least get some regulation?
Yeah,
It's just, yeah. I mean, even looking for like video work is just sort of like, nope. Like just going down the line. I'm just like, if it says AI or cryptocurrency, I'm just like, no, thank you.
I guess to tie it back to video games, though, I always thought that, you know, a big part of Sony and Microsoft's success is that I guess I always presumed that their video game divisions were in certain ways, in whatever ways, subsidized by their other businesses. And while I think that's certainly true, almost definitely true of Microsoft.
Very true for Microsoft.
Yeah, it was pointed out to me by a friend of mine who has worked for PlayStation for a long time. He was like, no, actually, it's the other way around for Sony. Like, PlayStation now subsidizes everything else.
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
How
yeah,
about
yeah.
that?
All right. Well, that?
Yeah.
That's sounds like a podcast.
That is
I
a podcast.
I was going to say. Yeah. I don't have a clock in front of me. It's weird.
Yeah. We're going to be investing into AI so we don't have to get together to record these anymore. That's our plan.
Well, really. my voice was AI when they said that I was in the room. I was. I was a brain in a jar and a megaphone.
Yeah. I mean, Dave's probably the most AI-able, having recorded his voice for so much stuff and literally, you know, done voice recording for AIs, sort of.
Yep.
So it's just me. That's all that's
You're
left.
The only human.
I'm the only human left.
Yeah. You got pluribide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stay gold, pony boy.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening. I guess next episode will probably be the blank of the year.
Yeah.
Wow.
At this point. Weird. Yeah. Coming up in about a month. We'll see.
Yeah.
When we're going to do that. So
I know. Hopefully some things go on sale.
We'll see. I mean, Black Friday has already started. It started 2 weeks ago.
Oh, God. Yeah. I haven't even looked.
No, there's a lot on my Steam wish list that I'm...
Well, the Steam sale hasn't popped off yet, so...
Right.
Yeah, well, even then, a lot of stuff just suddenly came up, and I know that there will be more. But really, I want to spend more time with Bonanza, because that could easily be a Game of the Year contender for me, and I've still barely touched it.
You've been a busy bee, basically, since that game came out. You've been perpetually busy, it feels like.
Yeah, and that's honestly not going to change from now to the end of the year. So, oh well, sorry, Bonanza. Nope. I'm sure you're really cool.
That's mostly why I've been stuck on Hades, too. It's like, it's the old familiarity thing.
Well, yeah.
I'll play something from this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not on play date.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
That's it.
See ya.
Bye.